Welcome back once again. It's coming up to 26 minutes to top of the hour. And now let's move on with the some of the stories that we have for you here this morning. Now, welcome back to Miraya Breakfast Show. Now, today we are joined by participants of the recent international dialogue on inclusive elections held in Juba from a second to 4th of September, and this three-day event brought together youth, elders, women, persons with disabilities, and faith-based leaders to explore ways to promote an inclusive and peaceful elections ahead of South Sudan's 2026 poll. Now, we have with us Joanna Rachel joining us via Teams representing faith-based organization, and we have churches, and in the studio right here in the studio Noel. Yes, and in the studio we have Noel. Yes, let's move on with the 3 days event, as I said, and elders, women, persons with disabilities that have been best leaders to explore ways to promote an inclusive and peaceful elections in the 2026 poll. Now, we have joined us, Rachel joining us via Teams, and also representing faith-based organization and the churches. And in the studio, as I said earlier, Noel Kaiga, representing youth and CSOs, and Dimba Chief Tamban from the Islamic Council. And yeah, just to start our conversation right here this morning, good morning to all of you, and thank you all for coming and joining us this morning conversation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, and we have online via Teams also one participant. Good morning to you. Are you getting us?
Yes, loud and clear. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us right this morning. And yeah, let's start our conversation here. Joanne, can you briefly share the main focus of the international dialogue and what it aimed to achieve?
It was an intergenerational dialogue which was focusing on a conversation between young people, women, faith-based organizations, and also the elders. So the idea was for us to come together and look at what inclusive elections look like, what democracy looks like, what the South Sudan we want looks like, and then learn from each other the challenges that are existing, what existed before, and what we can learn from what happened before, and also look into the future. So it was a very interesting conversation, a three-day conversation that helped us to explore some of the things that we need to do as South Sudanese in different age sets and also in different organizations within our different capacities. So it was really nice to see us bring together, harmonize our thoughts, our feelings, our worries. So that was the focus.
And from your perspective, what were the key lessons learned about promoting inclusivity during the elections?
The key lessons would be that it's very challenging to bring people together, but we still must try. And we need to understand what we mean by inclusivity. What kind of people do we want to include? And that means including everybody. So we also learned that we need to have policies in place. Our legal framework needs to be strong. It needs to be backed up by what the views of the people, and it also needs to be understood by the people. So if we don't have a legal framework that is known and understood, then we are bound to fail. We also learned that our traditional ways of elections are still valid, and we can learn from them how they used to choose their own leaders, and what criteria they would choose for their leaders, and then how they would conduct their elections by raising up their hands, and what are the challenges by raising up their hands. And we got to learn that we need to use the secret ballot. So we explored all those challenges and lessons that we can learn from the past, from our elders, and from what is happening right now.
How do you see faith-based organizations playing a role in ensuring peaceful and inclusive election in South Sudan?
Faith-based organizations have the convening power of bringing people together, of ensuring that the messages or the information that they're giving is valid because the people respect and have trust in the churches. So the legitimacy in our faith organizations will enable us to give the right information to the people, convene them, to give them voter education, civic education, and also they can even be polling centers. Number two, which is very, very important, is that faith institutions can play a role in resolving election-related conflicts. And you know, conflict is inevitable, and in elections, it happens. So these faith institutions come in to ensure that they mediate, ensure that they have the right people in the right places to observe these elections, and in the same way also lobby and advocate for funds for these elections to take place.
Let's bring in Noel Kaiga. Noel, as a representative of youth, what were some of the challenges young people face in participating in elections that were highlighted during the dialogue?
Yeah, thank you so much. My name is Noel. I am a youth and at the same time represented the civil society organizations that attended the workshop. The question is, okay, young people have several challenges in regards to making elections so inclusive. One of it is when we look beyond being in the city and we look down to the people, we see that most of the young people are not part of the decision-making process due to the fact that always we say the youth are the future leaders of tomorrow. So they are not given chances to express themselves and to say what they want. This also goes together with women who are by the virtue of the traditional norms, you know, in other cultures, they don't even allow women to come out and stay for a longer time. When it comes to dialogue or meeting, sometimes they take a little bit of time outside, and some people don't allow it to happen that their women go out or even their girls go out. So they are marginalized, and in this case, we agree that this coming election must be very inclusive, and we have already drawn strategies on how these women and youth can be involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also we can bring in Daimba Shafiq from the Islamic Council. Yes, what is your take on that?
Thank you very much. Morning to everybody. I'm Daimba Shafiq Taban from Islamic Council. You know, this time we need to be so inclusive in this election. One, we need to make sure that we serve our voters, exercise their right. A voter should know what is he or she supposed to do by providing voters information we provide to them. They have to understand the accurately election activities that are supposed, because it's their right as youth, as stakeholders, as faith-based organizations. This is their role as citizens of the country. So we need again to open a space, a wide access to the voters. As religious leaders, it's our role to play with the government together to open a wider access to the voters to participate in the election and have a conducive atmosphere that will not scare a voter to vote. This is what we have to do as religious leaders. We make sure these voters of ours, they are not in a state of fear that when I vote for X, I'll be threatened. No, they have to be free free completely, because it's their right to vote for a person that they want. So as the first time that we are going for election, we need to make it perfectly to make other countries get attractive to us as having first election that we are going in. So this is what I can put. Mm-hmm. And again, we have to provide a special facility, because we are saying of, we are talking of inclusive. There, you may find a polling station where even some of our brothers with the disabilities, they cannot even get access to vote.
Mm.
So we have to provide a special facility that it is inclusive to everybody, whether he has a visual impaired, hearing impaired, he's a physical impaired, he has to be free. He knows very well, if I go to this polling station where I'm voting, I'll not be in threat. I'll be free and I'll vote completely without anything that mm-hmm. is scaring me as a person with a disability. So the environment that these polling stations are going to be in should be a special facility that cannot harm person with a disability.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me bring in Joan Rochelle. What innovative ideas or strategies were discussed for engaging youth more effectively in a democratic process?
Well, we looked at that in different phases, and one of them was the legal and policy frameworks. We ensure that young people have the equal right to vote and elect, and also to stand for office, to run for office. And we also looked at having voter registration and voting accessible, making sure that the polling stations are accessible to all youth of all age sets. I know in South Sudan, the youth are between 18 to 35, but we haven't really defined that. We have also youth that are 40, 45 plus. And we also saw that we need to ensure that young people are engaged in civic education. They need to run awareness campaigns so that they understand their rights and how to vote. And also, there should be inclusive representation. There are young people who would like to be part of the polling, on the polling paper. They need to understand what it means to be a leader, what it means to vote for your own leader, and what it means to have a legitimate government. And also, we saw that the strategy of security and protection is very, very important, providing safe voting environments for youth, not only youth, but also women and all vulnerable groups, to ensure that they are participating effectively in these elections. And also, we looked at participation beyond voting. What does it mean for young people to be involved in democracy? Is it only voting? No, it's much more than that. It's holding the government accountable. It's about transparency. It's about exhibiting your leadership as young people. So in short, I would say the strategies were in laws, access to stations, access to information, education, which is a civic education, and also representation, which is key. And that's what inclusivity is all about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes, Noel, on this particular part, how do you see the participation of the youth or the young people in the process of the elections effectively?
Yeah, the participation of the youth, like in this situation, let's reflect, say, for 2010, last time when we were doing the election, then we will compare to what happens now. So many young people participated. For example, the civic education was very good. The civic education, we were able to move to every part. For example, let's say Greater IA, the innovation of what was called a democracy bus, which carried 32 civic educators that move all around, making sure that everybody gets information. So those are all youths moving, involving other youths to also be part of the election process, and actually others to be elected and also to run for offices. So we did that, and I see that in this time there will be, we need to do something for this in this case or in this coming election. This is because of the current security situation. We see that some places are not yet accessible, and some young people are locked out. So it's going to be a very big challenge for all the youth to be part. But with the strategies that have been mentioned, for example, the use of the digital platforms and also the availability of the radio stations, maybe we will use to explore more chance and use it so intensively to ensure that even those that we were not, that are faced challenges of accessibility due to other conditions that we all know, so that they will be able to participate effectively. So that will be a big challenge for youth in the process that is happening now.
Yeah, and based on your discussions, what do you think should be the immediate next step for you to contribute to the peaceful elections in 2026? And I can bring in Dimba.
Thank you. One, I just want to say that before even we go for election, we should understand our role. And we should understand the legal framework. When we understand the legal framework, that one will make us to have effective and credible election. The youth today, the few of them that have access to the election laws or to the legal framework generally, and majority of them, they don't understand their role as youth. So they have to understand what I as a youth, what am I supposed to do? Is my right in the constitution to vote? Is my right in the constitution to select a person of my choice as a youth? So this, and again coming to the faith-based organizations, we need to play an active role with the youth, to tell the youth in our mosques, in our churches, that you people, you have the right to vote. And you have the right, whether you're what, whether you're from where, you have that right. Because it's your right as a citizen of this country to exercise or to participate fully in the election. And all this, most of the youth, they have to participate freely in the political parties. Because now today when we say we are going to vote for election and we are not participating fully in the political parties, then that's not election. Definitely that's not election. Election means everybody has the right to choose what he like in his life.
Okay. Yes. Let me bring in Juan. What practical recommendations emerged for building trust and intergenerational solidarity during the election period?
The most important thing when it comes to that is information sharing. And the kind of information that is shared should be verified, and it should come from the right sources. And the young people and all those involved in the country, all citizens, need to have access to this information. And that's how we build trust and legitimacy in this electoral process. Number two is sometimes we listen to rumors. And as we know, it's not a rumor, but in our agreement, it says we will have elections by December 2026. So we haven't had an official announcement from the government about that. And that's why information sharing is key, so that we build that kind of relationship, we build that kind of trust between government and the citizens. It will be much easier now to make a plan for both the civil society, faith-based organizations, based on the information that we receive. And then I can also talk about the engagement, continuous engagement among all stakeholders in the same issue of the electoral process. With this continued engagement among the stakeholders, there is that relationship that is built, there is that trust that is built, and then there are strategies on conflict resolutions that come up. And in that way, we lay a foundation on how our elections will look like before, during, and after. So that's what I can share when it comes to trust and collaboration.
Okay. And Dimba, how can a community community and the religious leaders like yourself ensure that these recommendations are implemented on the ground?
Thank you. You know, to implement these recommendations, one, we need to sensitize our communities and pass the information concerning election. Two, as a faith-based organization, we need to work hand in hand with the government to ensure that the commission, the electoral commission, has been funded to implement the election process, which is coming. Though we are sure it's going to be there in 2026, that's correct, but we need to make sure the government and the civil society pass this information to the youth and tell them they have to be ready for election. Elections are coming and everybody must be ready to vote 2026.
Thank you so much, gentlemen and lady, for making our time speaking to our listeners into Radio Maria. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes, and that was Joanne Noel and Dimba for sharing your thoughts and joining us here in the studio. It's clear that, of course, the intergenerational dialogue, civic engagement, and the collaboration between the youth elders and faith-based leaders are crucial for promoting inclusive and peaceful election in South Sudan. We look forward to seeing these ideas translate into action ahead of the 2026 polls and the election. Thank you so much. Have a lovely day.